When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 4 podcast.
And we welcome all of you back. Final hour has arrived, and so much conversation about LSU under Brian Kelly. There's been a lot of criticism, a lot of blowback, a lot of interesting circumstances like Ed Ogeron speaking at Notre Dame. Brody Miller covers the Tigers, and he joins us now. Brody, great to have you back. It's been too long, and I know you covered the end of Coach O after the national championship, and now describe these last couple of months now that Kelly has arrived in Baton Rouge. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me as always, Paul. Yeah, I think the biggest takeaway from these last few weeks and months have been really just the way that things have been feeling a little, well, the first few weeks were a bit of nonsense, right? The pronunciation of family, the dancing, things like that. But I think in these last few weeks as spring ball's gotten rolling, the big takeaway that jumps out to me is simply things have been more steady. Things seem under control. You know, a lot of the stuff Brian Kelly gets so much credit for, you know, his process, program building, things like that. I think those are the things he's thriving at right now. You know, I do think LSU is kind of rolling in a lot of ways. They are getting accountability fixed. They are getting, you know, some of those issues that really hurt the Ogeron era under wraps. Do I know how good this football team is going to be in 2022? It's hard to figure out. They do have some big holes. But I do think you can see the signs of things that are going to lead this infrastructure being stronger in the future.
Brody, I want to get to the field, obviously, because that Florida State game is looming large, especially being in New Orleans. But what has it been covering Brian Kelly, being around him, watching the interactions that so many of his former critics are trying to make a lot out of right now?
Yeah, I think the main thing that I keep jumping to is he is more personable than he is sold as, I guess would be the best way to put it. I think you hear so much about, you know, his temper, grumpy or things like that. It'd be a weird culture fit down in the South and whatnot. And of course, right now, I think my colleagues, Pete Sampson and Matt Fortuna have coined it a charm offensive he's on. So, of course, I'm taking all of this with a bit of a grain of salt. But, you know, you talk to recruits around LSU, you talk and they talk about how he is much more personable than you would expect. And I think that's been the interaction we've as the media have had so far with him, is that he is cracking jokes in press conference. He is, you know, charming, for lack of a better word. He is in that zone right now. And I'm sure, you know, he has a political background and he's somebody who's been doing this for a long time. A lot of that is knowing he's the new coach and he's selling himself. But still, I do think the early interactions of him with him have been open. He's giving media, you know, unprecedented access for LSU media, you know, in terms of interviews with assistants and practice access, full scrimmages, things like that. So far, I think he has been personable would be the main word that's jumped out.
And I'm glad to hear that, because there have been, even in where you work, a lot of columns insinuating, yeah, you know, national championship or bust. I work with a Notre Dame fan, and I've never seen a more petulant group of people, including the guy in my ear right now, about Brian Kelly leaving. Like, why should he stay there? He was offered an opportunity to actually win a national championship, not get blown out in a national semifinal.
Yeah, and I think the biggest takeaway from these last few months has been, I think there was an element of things that, you know, I think Notre Dame is one of the best programs in the country, and you'd be foolish to think otherwise, but I think there has been a bit of an element of, you know, maybe there was facilities he wasn't getting. Maybe there were things around the program that weren't quite what he was sold when he, you know, certain contract extensions and things like that. And I do think that was a big selling point. And, you know, I think respect always plays into these things, but I think those things add up. And then when you come back to so many of the interviews he's given lately, whether nationally or local, there seems to be a strong focus about what LSU is providing. You know, the resources he's giving him, the recruiting infrastructure, things like that. I think those things really have been a big selling point for him. And I do think that, you know, he wanted a place where he could win a national championship, which he has been alluding that there was a limit at Notre Dame. He's been alluding to the fact that he had done what he could at Notre Dame. And that is a different argument that I'm not going to put my own opinion on. But still, it does seem like he felt like Louisiana, Southern recruiting, SEC, where maybe the recruiting's more straightforward than the national landscape of Notre Dame. It does seem like those were big selling points on top of, like we said, facilities and wanting those unlimited resources. Because when they've got here, you talk to Kelly, people around Kelly, close to Kelly, they'll say, wow, this is just a sports car they're realizing they have, and they keep talking like they didn't have that in Notre Dame.
I want to apologize. Something I said is incorrect, Brody. I said Notre Dame will continue losing in the national semifinal. The noted expert on Notre Dame football, Ed Ogeron, was up there recently, as you know, and said that they would win a national championship. So I want to make sure that side of the story has now. How did that play in Baton Rouge, by the way?
I think the honest answer is around Baton Rouge for the overall most part. Ed Ogeron is still kind of that fun, beloved uncle figure. You know, they all, their Cajun, you know, guy won him a national title. I don't think most people around this town look at Ogeron with a lot of anger. I think they're kind of, it's more of a, shame, man, why'd you know, it's a bummer it ended that way. I really do think that's more the mentality, even though they know, most of them know, we kind of left this program in a troubled situation. So I think the play around here, honestly, is probably more of, this is just a weird situation. I think there's a really odd marriage of Notre Dame and LSU lately, where I can't say there was much before ever. And all of a sudden, Marcus Freeman almost came to be the DC last year. Notre Dame steals him instead. Then Kelly comes to LSU, and then they try to bring Freeman with them, but then Freeman ends up getting, you know, keeps Notre Dame again. Now Ogeron's visiting Freeman. There's just this weird marriage there. People are like, I think the main reaction I've got is Notre Dame and LSU need to play each other on the schedule. I think that's been a popular sentiment.
Actually, you know, Lou Holtz will be in Baton Rouge. You're making the same statement. Let's talk about the most important thing, and that's what we are going to see on the field here in a couple of months. Based on the access you've had, the people with whom you visit, what are we going to expect from this LSU football team?
Yeah, I think just realistically, I think most people need to need to readjust their standards a little bit. You know, I think LSU was coming off 11 and 12 the last 2 years, I believe. And they are rebuilding in a lot of ways. And, you know, I think there's a lot of areas that are massive strengths. You know, defensive line's going to be loaded, receivers really talented, good running back room. You know, they have strengths. It's just there are a lot of infrastructural holes that were left from the previous regime that they've patched in the transfer portal, but it doesn't mean the depth's there and things like that. So I think LSU is in a tricky spot where they're good enough. The top level talent is, there's stars on this team. There's all Americans, you know, so they're good enough to really compete in the SEC, and against 9 out of 10 teams they play, they should be in it. You know, they have a chance of winning those games, but you know, as well as I, the SEC is about week in, week out. And I think that's the tough thing for them right now is, yes, I think they will win some games that you wouldn't expect them to. I do think that, you know, they will hold their own, but corner's really thin right now. You know, offensive line doesn't have the depth you'd like. Even receiver, as loaded as it is at like the top five, there's not really any guys after that. So I think the realistic expectation is somewhere in that 8-4, 9-3 range, but it's tricky because, like we said, on a good night, they're good enough to hang with anyone.
Talking to Brody Miller. Brody, I don't know if you can hear me now. When I'm watching you do what I've done throughout my tenure here, and I'm not a professional broadcaster like some of the guys you see. I know what you're going through.
I'm making a fool of myself with this headphone. Yeah.
You're not. For those who don't know what we're talking about, you wear this earpiece, and it keeps falling out if you don't have it glued in there correctly.
I appreciate the support.
You need bigger ears like mine, and then
that's true.
And then you could stick in almost anything in there. Let me ask you this. I've actually lost track of where I am. But finally, the most important part of this program is recruiting. How is Brian Kelly handling that part of it?
yeah, it does seem like there's a bit of a steady rollout happening right now where they've had three, you know, top 200 commitments in the last 2 or 3 weeks, including some key areas, right? They landed Mac Markaway, the top 100 tight end out of St. Louis. They added two top 200 safeties in the last week. I do think they were kind of taking a slow, you know, plan in terms of trying to really get the guys they want, figure out what they want to do. But it does seem like things are about to get rolling. I do think there's going to be more. And they do seem to be taking a national approach to thing, which obviously, you know, Brian Kelly's used to at Notre Dame, and maybe that skill set helps. Also, Ed Ogeron did that plenty in the last few years, but it seems like a little bit even more broad. But of course, the focus will always be, you know, Louisiana and making sure they own this state. That's going to be a tough battle this year, of course, with guys like Arch Manning and Eli Holstein that are going to be tough to keep in the state. But still, I do think they're going to at least hold their own in the state with some of the main, you know, non-quarterback pieces. And then nationally, I do think they're going to get rolling well enough to at least have a top 10 class, you would think, if not somewhere higher.
Brody Miller does such a great job covering LSU for The Athletic. Many thanks, Brody. We are heading to the break, and more of your phone calls right here at 855-242-7285.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
And we welcome all of you back. Final hour has arrived, and so much conversation about LSU under Brian Kelly. There's been a lot of criticism, a lot of blowback, a lot of interesting circumstances like Ed Ogeron speaking at Notre Dame. Brody Miller covers the Tigers, and he joins us now. Brody, great to have you back. It's been too long, and I know you covered the end of Coach O after the national championship, and now describe these last couple of months now that Kelly has arrived in Baton Rouge. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me as always, Paul. Yeah, I think the biggest takeaway from these last few weeks and months have been really just the way that things have been feeling a little – well, the first few weeks were a bit of nonsense, right? The pronunciation of family, the dancing, things like that. But I think in these last few weeks as spring ball's gotten rolling, the big takeaway that jumps out to me is simply things have been more steady. Things seem under control. Things, you know, a lot of the stuff Brian Kelly gets so much credit for, you know, his process, program building, things like that. I think those are the things he's thriving at right now. You know, I do think LSU is kind of rolling in a lot of ways. They are getting accountability fixed. They are getting, you know, some of those issues that really hurt the Ogeron era under wraps. Do I know how good this football team is going to be in 2022? It's hard to figure out. They do have some big holes, but I do think you can see the signs of things that are going to lead this infrastructure being stronger in the future.
Brody, I want to get to the field, obviously, because that Florida State game is looming large, especially being in New Orleans. But what has it been covering Brian Kelly, being around him, watching the interactions that so many of his former critics are trying to make a lot out of right now?
Yeah, I think the main thing that I keep jumping to is he is more personable than he is sold as, I guess would be the best way to put it. I think you hear so much about, you know, his temper, grumpy or things like that. It'd be a weird culture fit down in the South and whatnot. And of course, right now, I think my colleagues, Pete Sampson and Matt Fortuna, have coined it a charm offensive he's on. So, of course, I'm taking all of this with a bit of a grain of salt. But, you know, you talk to recruits around LSU, you talk, and they talk about how he is much more personable than you would expect. And I think that's been the interaction we've, as the media, have had so far with him, is that he is cracking jokes in press conference. He is, you know, charming, for lack of a better word. He is in that zone right now. And I'm sure, you know, he has a political background and he's somebody who's been doing this for a long time. A lot of that is knowing he's the new coach and he's selling himself. But still, I do think the early interactions of him with him have been open. He's giving media, you know, unprecedented access for LSU media, you know, in terms of interviews with assistants and practice access, full scrimmages, things like that. So far, I think he has been personable would be the main word that's jumped out.
And I'm glad to hear that, because there have been, even in where you work, a lot of columns insinuating, yeah, you know, national championship or bust. I work with a Notre Dame fan, and I've never seen a more petulant group of people, including the guy in my ear right now, about Brian Kelly leaving. Like, why should he stay there? He was offered an opportunity to actually win a national championship, not get blown out in a national semifinal.
Yeah, and I think the biggest takeaway from these last few months has been, I think there was an element of things that, you know, I think Notre Dame is one of the best programs in the country, and you'd be foolish to think otherwise. But I think there has been a bit of an element of, you know, maybe there was facilities he wasn't getting. Maybe there were things around the program that weren't quite what he was sold when he, you know, certain contract extensions and things like that. And I do think that was a big selling point. And, you know, I think respect always plays into these things, but I think those things add up. And then when you come back to so many of the interviews he's given lately, whether nationally or local, there seems to be a strong focus about what LSU is providing, you know, the resources he's giving him, the recruiting infrastructure, things like that. I think those things really have been a big selling point for him. And I do think that, you know, he wanted a place where he could win a national championship, which he has been alluding that there was a limit at Notre Dame. He's been alluding to the fact that he had done what he could at Notre Dame. And that is a different argument that I'm not going to put my own opinion on. But still, it does seem like he felt like Louisiana, South, you know, Southern recruiting, SEC, where maybe the recruiting is more straightforward than the national landscape of Notre Dame. It does seem like those were big selling points on top of, like we said, facilities and wanting those unlimited resources. Because when they've got here, you talk to Kelly, people around Kelly, close to Kelly, they'll say, wow, this is just a sports car they're realizing they have. And they keep talking like they didn't have that in Notre Dame.
I want to apologize. Something I said is incorrect. Brody, I said, Notre Dame will continue losing in the national semifinal. The noted expert on Notre Dame football, Ed Ogeron, was up there recently, as you know, and said that they would win a national championship. So I want to make sure that side of the story has now. How did that play in Baton Rouge, by the way?
I think the honest answer is around Baton Rouge for the overall most part. Ed Ogeron is still kind of that fun, beloved uncle figure. You know, they all, their Cajun, you know, guy won him a national title. I don't think most people around this town look at Ogeron with a lot of anger. I think they're kind of, it's more of a, shame, man, why'd you, it's a bummer it ended that way. I really do think that's more the mentality, even though they know, most of them know, we kind of left this program in a troubled situation. So I think the play around here, honestly, is probably more of, this is just a weird situation. I think there's a really odd marriage of Notre Dame and LSU lately, where I can't say there was much before ever. And all of a sudden, Marcus Freeman almost came to be the DC last year. Notre Dame steals him instead. Then Kelly comes to LSU, and then they try to bring Freeman with them, but then Freeman ends up getting, you know, keeps Notre Dame again. Now Ogeron's visiting Freeman. There's just this weird marriage there. People are like, I think the main reaction I've got is Notre Dame and LSU need to play each other on the schedule. I think that's been a popular sentiment.
Actually, you know, Lou Holtz will be in Baton Rouge. You're making the same statement. Yeah. Let's talk about the most important thing, and that's what we are going to see on the field here in a couple of months. Based on the access you've had, the people with whom you visit, what are we going to expect from this LSU football team?
Yeah, I think just realistically, I think most people need to need to readjust their standards a little bit. You know, I think LSU was coming off 11 and 12 the last 2 years, I believe. And they are rebuilding in a lot of ways. And, you know, I think there's a lot of areas that are massive strengths. You know, defensive line's going to be loaded, receivers really talented, good running back room. You know, they have strengths. It's just there are a lot of infrastructural holes that were left from the previous regime that they've patched in the transfer portal, but it doesn't mean the depth's there and things like that. So I think LSU is in a tricky spot where they're good enough. The top level talent is, there's stars on this team. There's All-Americans, you know? So they're good enough to really compete in the SEC. And against 9 out of 10 teams they play, they should be in it. You know, they have a chance of winning those games, but you know as well as I, the SEC is about week in, week out. And I think that's the tough thing for them right now is, yes, I think they will win some games that you wouldn't expect them to. I do think that, you know, they will hold their own, but corner's really thin right now. You know, offensive line doesn't have the depth you'd like. Even receivers, load as it is at like the top five, there's not really any guys after that. So I think the realistic expectation is somewhere in that 8-4, 9-3 range, but it's tricky because, like we said, on a good night, they're good enough to hang with anyone.
Talking to Brody Miller. Brody, I don't know if you can hear me now. By the way, when I'm watching you do what I've done throughout my tenure here, and I'm not a professional broadcaster like some of the guys you see. I know what you're going through.
I'm making a fool of myself with this headphone. Yeah.
You're not. For those who don't know what we're talking about, you wear this earpiece, and it keeps falling out if you don't have it glued in there correctly.
I appreciate the support.
You need bigger ears like mine, and then
that's true.
And then you could stick in almost anything in there. Let me ask you this. I've actually lost track of where I am. But finally, the most important part of this program is recruiting. How is Brian Kelly handling that part of it?
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be. Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/paul. That's hims.com/paul for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
Yeah, it does seem like there's a bit of a steady rollout happening right now where they've had three, you know, top 200 commitments in the last 2 or 3 weeks, including some key areas, right? They landed Mac Markway, the top 100 tight end out of St. Louis. They added two top 200 safeties in the last week. I do think they were kind of taking a slow, you know, plan in terms of trying to really get the guys they want, figure out what they want to do. But it does seem like things are about to get rolling. I do think there's going to be more. And they do seem to be taking a national approach to thing, which obviously, you know, Brian Kelly's used to at Notre Dame, and maybe that skill set helps. Also, Ed Ogeron did that plenty in the last few years, but it seems like a little bit even more broad. But of course, the focus will always be, you know, Louisiana and making sure they own this state. That's going to be a tough battle this year, of course, with guys like Arch Manning and Eli Holstein that are going to be tough to keep in the state. But still, I do think they're going to at least hold their own in the state with some of the main, you know, non-quarterback pieces. And then nationally, I do think they're going to get rolling well enough to at least have a top 10 class, you would think, if not somewhere higher.
Brody Miller does such a great job covering LSU for The Athletic. Many thanks, Brody. We are heading to the break, and more of your phone calls right here at 855-242-7285.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
And we're back. Vance is up next in Georgia. Vance, go right ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, Paul.
Hey there.
I just wanted to real quickly say that I laid my father to rest a year ago, February. He was 99. And believe me, his ears made you look like a parakeet. This guy had two Frisbees on the side of his head that he needed help putting a T-shirt on.
Well, and the good news for me I guess is I am Dumbo 2.0 compared to him.
But trust me, this guy had a Roman oar with a sail around it for a Q-tip.
That's funny.
But I've lived here for – I'm a native Georgian. I'm 66 years old. And – it's really appalling to me because I knew that actually I've always thought the worst fans in the United States of collegiate football were Ohio State fans. As you do might recall the torture we went through in 2015, which 90% of their fan base didn't even know they played Oregon for a national championship. It was just, like you said, it's all Ohio radio for months. Because they beat Alabama. But can you listen to these guys from Georgia? They win one national championship. You get a caller call up and say, Well, what's going to happen? Are we going to have to hear about Alabama winning seven championships when we're going to win four and five in a row? And then, of course, this is the time of year where all you have is speculation. That's all there is out there. And, my God, how perfect is Stetson Bennett going to have to be next year? How perfect is he going to have to be, Paul? What's going to happen if he misses a pass? Are they going to be screaming for somebody else?
Yes.
I mean, don't you think this? I mean, they act like they've been on top of the mountain forever, and to that one guy, boy, if we win four or five in a row, I'll say, well, if I'm an Alabama fan, I'll say, well, we got 92. We got 79 and 78. We got 64, 65, 61, and we got Rod. I mean, what is the point? Sounds to me like they just cannot get Alabama out of their head. What do you think?
Well, Vance, it's interesting, but a lot of people can't get Alabama out of their head. The only thing Georgia has done that most haven't is they've now beaten Alabama in a significant game, but
they don't seem to be very satisfied with it, do they?
Hi, it's Mike Greenberg letting you know ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sportsbook of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me, plus many more. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today. New users get a bet reset up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details. This podcast is proud to be supported by Jets Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jets is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Well, I don't know. I spoke with Kirby Smart the other day, and he seemed pretty happy. And now their fans, you know, I know this sounds silly for a talk show host, but you can't base everything on a couple of fans.
Oh, well, you're absolutely right, and I know there's more than that. There's only two different. There's two kind of people in the world. Those that call your show and sound like jackasses, and those that don't.
But Vance, you know something? Let me tell you a story. I was in Alabama for a long time, as you probably may know, and I ran into I happened to find myself with the president of the university, and we were talking about people that call in the talk show, and I was saying, listen, because he said, you know, I've heard a lot about some of these callers, and I said to him, you really can't get hung up on a couple of callers. I'm not sure they're always representative of your fan base. And he said, let me correct you on that. He said, they may not be representative, but all it takes is one or two or three to call, and the next thing I know, my assistants are running in saying, hey, everybody on the show is calling for a new coach. So it does matter. I'm trying to diagram this caller issue, but a couple of callers become a perception, and busy people who run banks and organizations and are part of the power base do pay attention because that's what they hear about. Or they hear it. I've had this problem with family members of coaches before. They hear one caller and they blame me for having given that opinion. So I know that kind of I've gone in a circuitous route here to answer your question, but it does matter.
You know, I understand. And, you know, it's, I guess what you're saying in a relatively simpleton way is, don't blame the person that you pay the money to in the gas station for the gas prices.
Right, exactly. Very true.
But at the same time, it's still fun to pick on them. And by the way,
but they're the only ones you see when you put your credit card down.
But all it takes is one caller to piss Jim off. So I was just having a little bit of fun there. Everyone has, this is a year, this is a time of the year of nothing but speculation.
Absolutely. You're right about that.
No one knows what's going to happen. Let
me say this, and thank you for the call. This is a tricky time of the year, and we love fans here. That's what we're here for. We wouldn't have a show without SEC fans. But people watch these games on Saturday and the previous Saturday, and we do make a lot of judgments based on what we see, and that can be tricky. Let me check in with William in Maryville, Tennessee.
Hello, Paul.
William.
You know, I want to ask you a question, and then I want to make a comment about Sam Pittman. My question is this, is when a player announces that he's going in the portal, and there were several here at Tennessee that announced that, you know, during the start of the season and then didn't land anywhere till way after the end of the season. What happens to that player? Are they still allowed to stay in the athletic dorm and use the training table and work out? Or what happens to that player?
Well, that's a good question, and I think it depends on the coach, William. If they do it during the season and they're still on the team, I'm imagining that they're not going anywhere. But yeah, if you come out, coaches are different. But if you come out and at the end of the season and say I'm in the portal, I don't want you around anymore. Do you?
Well, that's what bothered me about these particular players, and one of whom I've known since he was 7 years old, is he announced a transfer, you know, in the middle of the season, and in his particular position group, there were some injuries, but he was in the transfer portal. He was an afterthought. And I was sitting here thinking, well, why would any player do that? Because if they do lose the training table, the weight room, you know, the facilities, maybe the academic help, all they're doing is hurting their prospects for a better transfer destination.
But William, if you go in the portal, it means you're likely done there because you don't have a spot any longer. So, yeah, you don't see now it's different, of course, because you have all these sharks out there wooing players, but most of the time, you're in the portal because you have to be in the portal.
Well, okay, but then that goes to my next point about what Sam Pittman said. He's a very bright guy, and his comment about, under-evaluating players,
yeah,
or over-evaluating players? Over-recruiting. Well, you know, the flip side is that, you know, there are a lot of players. I mean, look at the All-SEC and All-Americans and NFL teams. A lot of players that, you know, not every five-star becomes a star, and not every three-star becomes a flop. And I think, you know, there's an old, my favorite Yiddish proverb is man plans and God laughs. And I think God is laughing because I don't know that you can buy. I mean, obviously, you know, there's another old saying that you can't win the Kentucky Derby with a mule, even a fast mule. You've got to have horses. And there's a lot of three-star horses out there play like five-stars, and a lot of five-stars play like mules. And, you know, so I don't completely buy this notion that you can buy your way to a national championship. So I think there's more that goes into it. And, I think it's going to have to play out to see where all this happens.
Yeah, I think, frankly, there's a short list of things you can buy your way to nowadays. It can help
you're
you,
right.
But not. I mean,
it can help you.
I mean, look at the New York Yankees. They have been trying to buy titles forever, and I don't think they've won a World Series in more than a decade, have they?
Exactly.
The Dallas Cowboys are the biggest and the baddest in the world, and the biggest mouth for an owner, and they can't get near a Super Bowl.
Well, and another thing I want to say is I think some of the Georgia fans need to give Stetson Bennett a break. The kid is only to be admired, and all of these people in the offseason dogging him, I think that's shameful.
Well, William, I appreciate that, but at some time, I think that battle, though, that is already one of the themes. We saw it at Alabama with Jalen Hurts. He quarterbacked the team to a national championship. He didn't throw the winning touchdown in the national championship game, and that became But so far we haven't identified that one guy who is going to take his job. There are two right now who are vying for the number one position. We're up against a break. Back with much more after this.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network, beginning at 3 Eastern.
Final few minutes of our program. Clark is up next in Georgia. Hello, Clark.
Hey, Paul. Good to talk to you. I've listened to you for a long time. This is my first chance to actually get through. Hope you're doing well today.
We're doing great. Thank you.
Well, not to necessarily piggyback off of Vance, but I kind of had a rebuttal for Jacob from Georgia a few segments ago. I've grown up a lifelong Alabama fan here in Georgia, and needless to say, the first few years or so wasn't too great of my childhood, remembering Dennis Franchione and Mike Shula and that 2 weeks of Mike Price that I don't have to really go back through. But I think there needs to be a little bit of context added to why a lot of Alabama fans are perceiving the way Georgia fans have handled this success the last few months. When you see how they've treated Stetson Bennett, when you see the way that it seems like Georgia fans have been more obsessed with beating Alabama than they were with actually winning the national title. Not to say they didn't enjoy the national title, but it almost seemed like there was this urge to beat Alabama more than necessarily anything else. And now that they have reached the mountaintop, there's this idea with a lot of fans that they're just going to carry this thing on the same way Alabama has the last decade and a half. And I think that it's very careful to not count your chickens before they hatch, so to speak, because what Alabama's done and the way that they've reinvented themselves on the offensive side of the ball, the way that they've recruited better athletes on the defensive side of the ball to truly play a sideline-to-sideline defense these last 5 or 6 years, that's something that it's very difficult to replicate, let alone, bring in 2 or 3 national titles over a 5-year span, which Alabama's managed to do twice in the past decade. So I think, Georgia fans just need to be really careful because they're teetering on a line of becoming too arrogant for their own good. And I know what it looks like because I've seen a lot of bandwagon Alabama fans come on that will gladly wear the script A when in 2007 they were either wearing a NASCAR hat or a Georgia hat. So I know that from experience. And, I look forward to calling into your show again. I'd just like to hear your opinion on it.
Thank you very much, Clark. It's good to have you on. I look at Georgia fans, and they should enjoy the moment. But this isn't just some fluke national championship. This isn't because of one player. This is the real deal. This is something Kirby Smart has been building for 5-6 years. Thank you for the call. Let's check in with Jacob, who is up next. Hey, Jacob.
Hey, what's going on, boss, man?
Hey,
I just wanted to tell you, I know there's Legend, Handsome Joe, and all them out there that are big Alabama fans, and I just wanted to touch up on the fact that, it's just one championship that we won, but are they going to keep saying this stuff year after year after year until we win 7 championships? And I would like to change my name from Jacob from Georgia to the GOAT from Georgia. I'm better than the legend.
Well, thank you, Jacob. You certainly gave a good first audition on that. JK is up next.
What's up, Paul?
JK, what about all these Georgia-Bama fighters going on here?
Hey, you know what, Paul, what's funny, man? I get the same little argument in my little sports group. They talk about how long it's been since Miami won a championship, 20 years, 21 years. They talk about how long it took Georgia to win another championship. But the Bama fans, what they fail to realize and what they conveniently leave out all of these little arguments is when Alabama went from 1980 to 2009 and only had one championship, so that's about 30 years with, the convenient forgetfulness. You know what I mean? So all teams go in spurts, and some teams are so unfortunate not to win a championship at all. So Georgia should keep celebrating and celebrate until September because they're the national champions. And the Bama fans might as well just shut up and deal with it.
Well, fair. I think Georgia, I think Alabama fans have dealt with it pretty well. JK,
let me ask you a question. Let me ask you a simple question.
Sure.
What normal Bama fan is okay with them losing the national championship? They can lie about it. They can fake it. But they're all still probably throwing up in the bathroom.
Yeah, JK, though, like they had a losing record or fired its coach, like some other programs I know, like yours.
That's right.
They won the SEC championship. They had an unfortunate. They had to face the same team again. They lost.
Georgia had a better team than they did.
What's that?
I know you're the DH for Alabama, and you're gonna put the little snarly remarks.
Nothing snarly about it. I think everyone knows that six national championships since 2009, and you're still trying to get one since 2000. Come on, man.
Paul, we know how many championships they got. You talk about it every day. But this is what I want to ask you as a Bama fan.
Your team is on Skid Row, and Alabama's living in Buckingham Palace, and you're acting like you have a role in this conversation. You don't have any voice your program is terrible.
Hey, fine, Paul. The Hurricanes are living in a tent in Miami in Dade County somewhere. So I'm talking about them too. But let me ask you a question.
You brought in the guy that was going to bring Miami back to glory, and then you had to fire him to go out and bring another guy in. How many times? I mean, I think Cristobal is the guy. I'm with you. I'm not against him, but I've heard this movie many times. Thanks, JK. Try hard. Maybe a better call tomorrow. Have a good night.